I'm so glad you're with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. And we got to talk about a big ripoff alert that is going to be something that's part of our lives going forward. And you've got to know this and be prepared for this. So it got a lot of publicity just because of who was involved. But the Twitter hack that happened in the last day was so extreme in who was attacked. A lot of people from show business, the account of Joe Biden, Elon Musk, a ton of well-known and recognized people's accounts were hacked for a single purpose, and that was to rip people off in cryptocurrencies. So you got to know that hacking is just so much a part of our lives. In addition, you may or may not have heard the other hacking story that's gotten much less publicity, and it's about what the Russians have done in the last week, apparently, engaging in extreme hacking on U.S. government sites and sites in other countries as well. And so we face the problem that social media was never about truth. It was never about fact. Social media is about information. Information is different than truth or fact. And so hackers know that people who frequent social media take what they see and believe it. That's why there are so many hoaxes that are spread on social media. We're going to see a lot of that in an election year this year. What I want you to know is, outside of election politics, most hacks are designed around money, either to hack in to steal your money or to hack to con you into giving somebody money. And so please be very, very aware about how everything you do electronically is potentially a target, no matter how good your own desires and abilities might be to create a secure environment for yourself. And no matter how strong these organizations and websites work to try to maintain security, hackers do nothing 24/7, 365 days a year, this year 366, but try to break in and steal or break in and con. So please know that when you see what you see, there may be much less than what meets the eye. And staying aware of that is key to protecting yourself. And I want to mention again about the cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies have become a key area for fraudsters to steal from you. Fraudsters to convince you that you're going to solve all your money troubles or create enormous wealth with fake money. And that's just what it is. It is fake money. And know that it is not a stable thing. Some are legit, but not stable. And others are just crooks. So please be very wary and be aware. And all that stuff floating around on social media about how you can dare to be rich in cryptocurrency, no, you're not the one who's going to get rich. I love answering your questions that you post for me at clark.com/ask. Producers Kim and Joel alternating with your questions. And Kim, who's up first?
Today up first is Barbara from Oregon. Barbara says, do you have any information for retirees who need health insurance but are not yet eligible for Medicare?
Wonderful question. And for you, you can buy a legit healthcare policy on healthcare.gov. Now, on healthcare.gov, the policies will not be cheap unless your income is more modest. But the advantage is that you will not be excluded because of pre-existing conditions. And there are tight caps on how much you can be charged being older. Historically, what happens is if somebody is an early retiree, typically between ages 50 and 64, you could not buy legit health insurance because of exclusions because of pre-existing conditions. And as you get older, pretty much all of us end up with some kind of pre-existing that would either cause them not to be willing to write coverage for you or exclude specific things. So one of the things you have at healthcare.gov is you can't be excluded because of pre-existings. And pre-existings are, in fact, covered. And so there's no difference for you between someone else who is in supposedly perfect health. And there's also a collar that restricts how much more you can be charged for coverage, 50 to 64, even though your risk to the health insurer is higher than a younger person. So in reality, people that are under age 40 are subsidizing the premiums of people who are 50 to 64, and the people in their 40s are pretty much dead even. So just thank a young person if you're able to find a policy that you like that covers you in that gap till you're eligible for Medicare. Joel?
Clark Joe in California says, I was surprised to learn that the bank I use had difficulty passing the Fed's recent stress test. Given the uncertainty of the banking industry's exposure to loans and mortgages that may be in jeopardy, would it be wise to look for a stronger bank right now? And if so, do you have any recommendations?
Well, you're with a giant monster mega bank if it's been publicized that they failed to meet the stress test. So I don't like you being with a giant monster mega bank anyway. So this would be an opportunity for you to go find a small local bank or a credit union or use an online bank, any of those as alternatives. And as far as being with a bank that failed stress test, there's no doubt in my mind that the giant monster megas get an unfair subsidy from you and me as taxpayers. And if any of them were failing, the federal government, which means you and me, would be bailing them out. So I don't worry so much that they're going to cease to exist because they're intertwined too much in the financial system of the country, the plumbing of the financial system, for them just to be shut down. What is at risk is if you have more than $250,000 in that giant monster mega bank. But the best answer anyway is go smaller and get a more personal experience than you're ever going to get with that big bank. Kim?
Daniel in Wyoming wants to know, is it advisable to purchase a used vehicle from a car rental agency?
That is a great question. The car rental companies obviously are seeing a drop in demand that is, I mean, earth-shattering. It looks like it's settling in at about a 75% drop in business. So the vehicles they need in their fleet are far fewer than they would normally have to have. So they're dumping vehicles into the used vehicle marketplace at a higher than normal rate. Now, if you buy one of them, this is the trade-off. If you buy a used rental car, you're going to get one that's newer. It will be likely a 2019 or 2018 model, but it will have very high miles on the odometer, which I'm not excited about. If I were thinking about my preference, I prefer that you buy a model year back, let's say a 2017, with a lot lower miles than you'd get from a car rental fleet selling off a 2018 or 2019. When used vehicles are priced in the marketplace, the model year affects the price more than the miles. And when you're talking about a 1 or 2 model year difference, I think that that's really not a good way to choose. I would go lower miles 1 year further back or 2 years further back than higher miles and a more recent model. just my opinion. In any used vehicle, remember, have it inspected by a mechanic before you buy. Joel?
Clark Sinclair in New York says, I'm currently in a forbearance plan, and at the end of my forbearance, I was considering doing a loan modification. Would this be a good option? Would it affect my credit score? And are there any positives to doing a loan modification compared to doing a refinance in order to try to save on the closing costs?
Okay, so we got some things to talk about here. This is not a time to do a loan mod. So loan mods were really a big thing from 2007 to 2012. And they didn't exactly work that well. But under the federal legislation and how your mortgages work during coronavirus is if you've had hardship, you're able to do the forbearance. And you're not going to need to do a loan mod because at the end of your forbearance, which is typically 3, 6, or 12 months, you can keep extending it, you will have options how you want your loan reset. And the thing that most people will end up doing who go the full 6 or 12 months is they'll end up adding those payments to the end of their mortgage. You're not being reported as delinquent unless the lender is breaking the law. And so you do have the option of, if you're okay back on your feet financially with today's low rates, to do a refi. A refi would make much more sense than attempting to do any loan mod. And you might not be successful with that anyway, especially since the congressional law, I mean, the federal law, gives you these options to be able to handle your loan. By the way, the payments that you have been in forbearance on, if you do a refi, they're taken care of as part of your refinance. Kim?
Shay in Texas says, I'm attending an online course to become a home inspector. It's both online and out in the field usually, but since COVID-19, they're only offering virtual ride-alongs and it's online only. It is a brick-and-mortar school technically, and they usually have class studies. Should I be paying full price or should I get some sort of a discount since the training is only online and the field experience is only virtual?
Yeah, this has been a conundrum, and you think about all the different sectors of the economy where the services are being offered online that used to be high touch in person. And I can't think of a situation where online is as good as what you have high touch in person. I don't think you're getting the same level of skills that you're going to need as a home inspector taking that program online and lacking the ability to be in the field, seeing things, touching them, experiencing them. I don't think that curriculum is worth the same tuition. So I'm with you that they're able to offer the online only, almost certainly at a lower cost than they offered the in-person. And you should be getting some of that savings. Stan is with us on the Clark Howard Show. And Stan, you know, there are certain words that are potential cuss words on our show, and you're about to ask me one of those, aren't you?
Right.
What is it you're thinking of doing? Now, if you have small children, you might need to block their ears.
I know what you think about policing cars, but a neighbor of mine who used to have the business of fleet purchases is telling me that the way cars are changing right now, he'd recommend for me at my age, I'm 78, to lease a car for 3 years, get another lease for another 3 years, and then at that point decide if I ever want to drive again. But he says everything's changing so fast that you really don't want to buy into a car and hold on for the next 10 years because you're out of date. So I know you're not a fan of leasing, but at my age, does that make sense, or should I really purchase a car?
Well, I have a crazy response to that, and you're going to think I've lost my mind.
Okay.
But what I would advise is that you buy a 3-year-old vehicle that is still going to have all the modern bells and whistles on it. And you buying a three-year-old vehicle, somebody before you has covered most of that depreciation already. The loss in value is so heavy in those first few years. And then you're a free agent. So if you have that vehicle for a year, let's say, or 2 years, and new technology really does emerge that you're like, hey, I want out of this, or you decide, you know, I love this vehicle I bought, I want to keep it longer, you can keep it. Or if you hit a point in your early 80s where you say, you know, maybe I shouldn't be driving anymore, you maintain 100% flexibility if you buy a three-year-old vehicle that you don't have if you go into that contract of a lease. You're in that for three full years. And if you like the idea of cycling through vehicles and you can budget for it and you want to do a three-year lease, that's fine. You can do that. And there will be a number of factory-subsidized leases later this summer. So I think that financially would not be a brutal decision either way. But I kind of love at 78, you having maximum flexibility that you would not be afforded by buying a brand new car. I wouldn't see it with a lease. You'd really have that full flexibility with a three-year-old. Glad you've taken time out of your day to join us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you have. Our websites are clark.com and clarkdeals.com. So there was something that the Congress did just before coronavirus that makes a big difference for small businesses, and is just coincidental that it happened just before we got into this terrible economic cycle with Corona. You know, a lot of businesses have seen some recovery recently in their business, a lot of restaurants and things like that. And now with the big community spread of coronavirus in a bunch of states, activity slowed down again. And I've been reading stories that people who struggled through from March till now and thought they were finally going to be in the clear, now suddenly their revenues are declining, or they're having to close, like restaurants close their dining room, whatever, and they're giving up. They're saying, I give up. I can't do this anymore. I got all this debt now and all the rest. Well, I want to tell you about what Congress did that fits your circumstance, and maybe you don't give up. Historically, big corporations have had access to Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. It allows a business to have protection from all its debts and continue to operate under the protection of the bankruptcy court. And Chapter 11 has always been designed to only favor the big companies. Well, that's the change that Congress made that went fully into effect earlier this year, is that small businesses now can try to fight for another day by using Chapter 11 like big companies. And what happened with the new law is you don't have the massive expense of a Chapter 11, which is what always kept small businesses away from it, that there is this special process available, and it gives a small business the ability to push the landlord back and anything else like that. Let's say you had, let me give you an example. Let's say you had a small retail company and you had five locations, and right now you could probably continue to operate two of those five, let's say. But the other three, you got to cut them loose. Well, outside of bankruptcy, you're on the hook for those leases and everything else you've committed to for those three locations you want to walk away from. Well, with the new Small Business Chapter 11, you have the ability to walk away from those obligations and try to save your company at the two remaining locations. Just an example. And a lot of restaurants may have that are small restaurants may have multiple locations in the area where you are, and you've got to do everything you can to try to keep the doors partially open. And this is where the new bankruptcy law could come into play for you. And I know there are people who attach a severe stigma to bankruptcy. They feel like they're not meeting their obligations. But the reality is, if you go bust and fail with your business, you're not able to meet obligations either. If you're able to use bankruptcy as a way to have protection from creditors and continue to operate and live for another day and then be able to pay your bills going forward, it is a potential alternative. I know I may be whistling past the graveyard, though, because with what business owners have been through over the last 4 months, you may just be worn out. You may be exhausted. You may not feel like trying to save your business anymore. But if you are, know that this is a potential alternative for you. The number of businesses filing, according to the American Bankruptcy Institute, under this new statute has gone up triple in just a very short period of time. And it's time for your questions for me, where you post questions at clark.com/ask. And who's next?
Clark, Christina in New Mexico has got a question. She says, I'm fortunate to continue to have a job that allows me to work from home during COVID. I'm curious about what I can track and claim on my income tax in regards to working from home, though. My utility bills have risen since being home 24/7. My cell phone that my son has me on his family plan is used for work all the time now. So what can I use as a deduction on work from home expenses?
So not really much of anything. You possibly could do a home office deduction, but I think that this is a issue for many of us. You know, we had to go to unlimited data on our home internet, which increased our cost $35 a month. And it's just something that I've had to absorb. And there's a number of expenses we face that, and remember, employers, if they start eliminating office space and all the rest, they're reducing their overhead. And that's why, to me, the answer so much is not in your tax return. The answer is employers providing a technology allowance to workers that are working from home because they can't come into the office. And as we talked about recently, the amount of office space demand in the United States is going to decline as companies say, you know, that we can get by with less space. They're going to save a lot more money on that than the small amount of money that would help you with the extra expenses that you're having. On the expense, you mentioned cell phone. Go look at our cell phone plan guide at clark.com. You may be significantly overpaying for that cell phone service. And there are a bunch of offers with unlimited data on cell phone plans that are very inexpensive now. Even for a couple, the price is down to around $35 a month per person for unlimited data cell phone plans. Kim?
Beulah in New York says, since tax day was delayed until July 15th, how does that apply to the April and June deadlines for estimated tax payments needed to meet our total for 2021 tax year?
Oh, there's no holiday on that. As somebody who makes ES also, you just got to make those quarterly estimated tax payments just as you would before. That has not changed. And remember, those ESs you're doing this year, I don't know what the S is for, but anyway, the estimated payments you're making that you're doing now, they're for next year, not this year anyway. So those continue like clockwork as before. I'm sorry that I can't tell you there's a holiday from those. If financially you're in a hurting position and you can't make your estimates, the good news is that because of how low interest rates are, the penalty for underpayment, under withholding of taxes is not as vicious as it was before. So you're not going to face massive penalties if you end up not being able to make a quarterly estimate. But if you can make them as scheduled. Joel?
Clark Steve in Washington says, where's the safest place to put your investments during a recession? I'm heavily invested in stocks, but I'm thinking I'd like to roll some of those investments into a safer place. I'm not necessarily worried about making a lot of gain, but I really just don't want to incur loss.
Well, I hear your sentiment, and it's all a matter of how soon you're going to need the money, because it's impossible for any of us to predict when a stock market hits a bottom and when a stock market recovers and when that recovery starts. So you don't want to miss when things turn. And the crazy thing is they turn when the economy is still looking bleak and dark. And so a recession is not a reason to go to the sidelines unless you are in or approaching retirement. And even then, it doesn't mean you go all to cash as an alternative. So I am old enough that you'd think that I would have changed something, but I haven't changed anything in my investment mix because I have a mix that I have funds not at risk plus the money I have invested in the market. So my allocations are I'm comfortable with, and I've changed nothing. So particularly if you're younger, just stay in the game, steady as you go. And if you're contributing through a 401k or your own Roth IRA or something like that, keep doing that as you are doing it. Because even in a decline, all that means is every month you're contributing, you're buying more shares with the same money. Ultimately, when the economy recovers, you make more money. Staying steady Eddie in the market is what creates financial security long-term. Kim?
Mindy in Georgia says, my grandson's bar mitzvah was scheduled for August 22nd, 2020, and we had to cancel due to COVID. How can I get my deposits back from the DJ and the videographer? I told them we had to cancel, and they said that they have to hold the money until we reschedule a new date. What if the business goes out of business before then?
Well, you're predicting the future because some of them will go out of business. It all depends on what agreement you entered into at the time you signed up the DJ and any other services. The bar and bat mitzvah thing is the same as it would be for a wedding or any special event that you've booked people for. It all goes back to their policies on refunds or what their procedure is in the event of a cancellation or a postponement. So I'm really sorry to tell you, you do stand the risk that you'll lose the money. And if the deal with the professionals you had hired was that the money was non-refundable, then unfortunately, even considering the pandemic, they can hold on to the money. It's their choice in the circumstances of a pandemic if they want to make an exception to their normal policies, but they don't have to. And yes, if they vanish, your money vanishes with them. And I'm really sorry I can't give you a better path to try to score refunds. Susie joins us here on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Susie.
Hi, Clark.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry to hear that you apparently suffered a layoff. Is that right?
Yes. You know, pharmacy is changing. I was in retail pharmacy for many years, and they had big layoffs. They have them across the country in the last year. And since I was so part-time, that's why I got the axe.
So you're a licensed pharmacist?
Yes.
Wow. You're still in big demand, though, aren't you, over all around the country, even if the retail chain didn't want you anymore?
Well, the other sector of pharmacy is hospital pharmacy, and it's really a completely different job. And I think hospital pharmacists are still in demand, but the retail pharmacists, they just can't make money. The pharmacies are losing too much money due to insurance reimbursements and fees that are imposed on them, and so it's just not economically feasible to have a retail pharmacy.
The pressure on the pharmacists also is beyond my imagination. You know, how many prescriptions the chains expect the pharmacists to fill per shift is mind-blowing.
Yeah, plus all the vaccinations that are happening now, too, are all on the pharmacists' shoulders. So in addition to the prescriptions.
I don't know if you know this, but I do yoga. And I was talking to a pharmacist who does yoga, and she does it almost 7 times a week because she says she needs it to deal with the stress of being a retail pharmacist.
Yeah, it was getting really hard. And so when I got laid off, I just had to decide, do I want to continue in pharmacy or am I finished after 18 years? And I just didn't think the stress was worth it to continue. So I think I'm going to let my license go and pursue other things.
Okay. Well, how can I serve you?
So I had a 401k built up with my company, and I have done nothing with it. It's just sitting there. It's about $176,000, went down $25,000 since the pandemic. But anyway, I don't know, should I just leave it there? Should I roll it over into an IRA, which I did do with a previous 401k before this one. I rolled it into an IRA that expires in year 2030. So I don't know if I could put it into that one, or should I start a new one?
There's
or
nothing
just leave it alone?
Wrong with you necessarily leaving it in that former employer's 401k. Were they a large pharmacy chain?
Yes.
Okay. Odds are, and you'll have to check on this, that the expenses in that 401k plan could be extremely low, them having been a large company, and it may be so low cost that it would be worth you staying in that plan instead of moving the money out into your own IRA. And if you were to, do you have access online where you can see what the expenses are in the plan?
Yes.
Do you know what any of the expenses are of the plan?
No, I don't know really much about it. I don't even know what expenses you're talking about.
Okay, so when you have an IRA, when you have a 401k, you pay a management fee for the investments you're in. And the management fee is set as a percent. So like in a good 401k, the expenses would be like 0.5% or less. So for every $100 you have in there, you pay 50 cents a year for them to manage your money for you. So if the investments you're in, and it will be, if you go look for that, it'll show you when you sign into your account. If your expenses are generally below 50 cents, leave it alone, leave it be.
Okay.
If the expenses are higher than that, I'd like you to go look at my investment guide at clark.com, and I've got recommendations about where I would move the money. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at clark.com and clarkdeals.com.